Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on this very fine day of Friday, October 4th, 2013. It's just amazing. I remember Grandma telling me, as you get older, time flies. It will go by faster and faster. Well, I don't consider myself old yet, but time is certainly going by. It's hard to believe Monday is going to be the 7th of October. But anyway, that's for another day.
October. You know, people say that, and it doesn't disturb me. October doesn't bother me. 2013 bothers me. I'm still getting ready to party like it's, you know, 2000. Yeah, 1999. I'm still in that mode, and here we are, 2013.
Isn't it amazing?
You got to be kidding me.
I know. Unbelievable. But let's get going right through this program. We got a lot to talk about today. Before it goes by any faster, let's go see what gold has today. Should have known they weren't going to keep that dollar below 80 for very long. You have that coming up today, up 0.36 at 80.12. So we're looking at gold today, just down a little bit, down $6 at $1,311. We have silver, that's up 4 cents today at $21.84. Platinum was the winner of the day, up almost 1.5%, up $20 at $13.95, along with palladium down 3. Didn't follow platinum today. It was down 3 at $7.04. And as I mentioned, the USDX today was up 0.36 at 80.12. Crude oil followed up a little bit, up 0.32 at 103.63. And of course, you all knew you couldn't go into the weekend with the Dow Jones being below 15,000. So they managed to get it up 76 points at 15,072, along with the NASDAQ up 33 at 38.07, S&P up 11 at 1690. And Wall Street was given advice on what's going to be happening in the next week or so in regards to the government shutdown and to the debt ceiling. And we'll be talking about that here in just a little bit, the big meeting. Everybody knows they had this big meeting together with, you know, the bankers and, you know, so much for your revolution now. It's back to the same old thing. And
No, they're just trying. I think, in fact, it indicates a certain amount of desperation. You're talking about the meeting between President Obama and some of the Wall Street financiers. True?
True.
Yeah. According to reports, I believe it was Reuters, we've got it. I'm not looking at it right this minute. We'll dig into it a little deeper during the program. But the purpose of the meeting was to try to get the bankers to agree to extend more credit to the federal government. Now, it just strikes me as odd. It's almost as if the bankers should be coming to the White House and offering and give them a deal. Because, you know, the government, you know, lend money to the government. You can't miss.
You
instead,
up,
here we got
now.
The government going hand in hand to see the bankers. And the implication, I don't know that this is the truth, but the implication is that Obama's in pretty please, extend us some credit so we can get through. That's evidence that they're hitting a wall. That's the way it appears to me. And it may be that they haven't yet hit the wall, but nevertheless, they're pretty close. And it raises problems. If the government can't buy the American people, they can't count on the American people's loyalty and support unless they're giving them something for nothing, or at least ostensibly giving them something for nothing. As long as you can give away Obamacare and Obama phones and whatever else it is, and Obama Krispies, right? As long as they're getting free Obama stuff, well, they'll support the government. But as soon as it turns out he hadn't done anything for them lately, I don't think he can count on their loyalty, and we're going to see a dramatic change if they're a broke, and they might be, if they're coming on that moment. And really, you got to figure that's happening because who do they borrow money from right now? The Federal Reserve. My understanding is that 80% of the treasuries that are being sold right now are being sold by the federal government to the Federal Reserve. And the reason is because they can't get conventional foreign lenders and American lenders to buy those U.S. treasuries. So the Federal Reserve pays for them at what appears to be a market price, but they're artificially supporting that price. What would the value of a U.S. Treasury be right now if the Federal Reserve wasn't agreeing to overpay every time they want to sell some and maintain the illusion that the market for U.S. Treasuries was so strong? What would the real price of U.S. Treasuries be, you know, if the Federal Reserve wasn't meddling? They're essentially salting the mine. I know, you know, used old timers, if they were going to sell a mine, then they'd take a shotgun and load it full of gold nuggets. You know, put gold nuggets instead of lead shot in the shotgun shell and go in there and fire a couple of rounds into the walls of the cave. And then it would look like there's gold that's in the walls of the cave, and people, oh my gosh, we got to buy this place. There's nothing in it. The government, the Federal Reserve, is doing something like that right now. It's more evidence that the government is perhaps desperate for funds.
And the U.S. is getting warnings from Japan. Came out, the Bank of Japan came out and warned today that they're actually ready to top up its existing massive stimulus that they have for their recovery that's supposedly underway if their economy was threatened by our standoff, by our budget standoff. The Bank of Japan's governor came out to say, and he warned of a severe global impact from the U.S. fiscal standoff. Yesterday, you had Christine Lagarde of the IMF come out and said, basically, fix it. Telling us what to do, talking about the failure to raise the debt ceiling and how it would hurt the rest of the global economy. So, you know, it's hard to believe that, you know, and, you know, Boehner already said that, you know, he's not going to default, you know, there isn't going to be a default. And so we'll see how they work
that.
But
you know what else he said by implication? There could be a default. He's saying he's not going to allow it to happen, but he's not denying that it's possible. And that's interesting information all by itself, because if the government's back isn't to the wall, nevertheless, you can see from Boehner's statement that they are close to the wall. They may not be at the wall yet, might not get there. Who knows when they're going to get there? But a default is possible. If it weren't possible, why does it's like me saying I will not allow an asteroid to hit the Earth last week. You know, If it's not possible to have a default, Boehner has no business saying he won't allow one to take place. So that tells us all by itself. This is like dealing with someone. You know what it takes for an involuntary bankruptcy. You need three creditors. You owe money to three different people. If they combine and put in a complaint that you're not paying 3-year bills, and they can take you to bankruptcy court and put you into an involuntary bankruptcy. Well, what we're seeing right now with the federal government is they're not so far removed from that. You know, they may have three or more people. I'm not arguing that three people are going to put the federal government into bankruptcy court. But the point is, technically, they may already be bankrupt. And arguably, they have been. Arguably, they've been bankrupt since 1971. When they stopped redeeming the foreign-held dollars with gold. They haven't paid a bill. And we'll get into that. That's another one. As a matter of fact, I'm just looking at it right now. I don't know if you want to touch this right now, but U.S. head, Treasury head Jack Lew, he described the situation as follows. This is from Global Research. If we have insufficient cash on hand, it would be impossible for the United States of America to meet all of its obligations for the first time in our history. Oh, my gosh, we might default. It would be terrible. It would be the sky would truly fall. That's what he's implying. That's a bunch of crapola. The last time our government could meet any of its foreign financial obligations was 1971, when President Nixon closed the gold window and stopped redeeming foreign-held U.S. dollars with physical gold. Last time our government could meet any of its domestic financial obligations was about 1968, when the government stopped redeeming silver certificates or any other kind of paper currency with silver dollars. Over the past 40 years, government has persistently defaulted on its debt. It's not a new situation. Oh, my gosh, the government's going to default on its debt. This is really serious. No, it's not. They've been defaulting on the debt for 40 years insofar as the only thing they'll give you are worthless pieces of paper. They're not paying the debt with gold and silver. Very few people understand that they're only discharging the debt. They're not truly paying their debt. They've been defaulting for 40 years. This isn't news. And on top of which, and it's not just a matter you can sit back and some people would debate, well, the government's paying its bills. It's paying with pieces of paper. Well, yeah, but here's one other problem. In the last 40 years, those pieces of paper have lost 95% of their purchasing power as compared to gold. They have been defaulting for the last 40 years merely by causing inflation. Every time they allow more inflation, every time they create more inflation, they are paying their debts with cheaper dollars. That is a small default every single time. They're not defaulting on the whole debt. But if you have 3% inflation per year, you are defaulting on 3% of the debt. You're paying it back with cheaper dollars. If you've got 10% inflation, you are defaulting on 10%. You give them $100 if that's what you own, but they only have $90 purchasing power. The debt is being defaulted. So the point, here we have Jack Lew with the Treasury Department saying this is the first time in history we might default on our obligations. That's just nonsense. We have been defaulting persistently for at least 40 years in this country, and it is improbable that we will stop doing so anytime in the near future. So what do you think, Melody?
Well, let me flip a coin here. You're absolutely correct. And, we always get to the point we're going to have to hit rock bottom before we can turn anything around. And, if we did their default, what they call a default, and we hit rock bottom, then we have a chance to start over.
I understand.
What's funny about the shutdown this week, it doesn't stop them from doing a lot of things that they're going to do and what's going to destroy this country even further.
I mean,
you and I talked about prior to the program, about the talks. There's going to be additional talks next week between the U.S. and the European Union for the trade agreement between these two countries, between the European Union and the U.S. What type of impact do you think that's going to have on the U.S.? It can't be good. Free trade is not good. So
they say it's going to increase the trade. I agree that that might happen. You know, and whether it's whether the trade balance works best for it favors Europe or it favors the United States, who can say? I don't know how that'll work out. But I wonder, they're going to have, they are proposing a free trade agreement with Europe. Won't take effect for another year anyway. But what is it that we can get from Europe other than maybe Swiss chocolate and French wine or something like that that we can't get right here?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that. They have a very similar, their economy is very similar to our own in terms of their industrial capacity or whatever. You know, what is it that we're going to get from them? There may be things. I get that. They'll be, you know, they'll bring in more Porsches. More European-made automobiles will come into our market. More American-made automobiles will go into the European market. Hard to say how it'll all work out, but why do I need a car from Europe if I can get a car that's made in this country? And I know that there's, you know, BMW, who wouldn't want one? I get that. But just the same, there is something to be said for building your own. Build it in your own country. Buy your own. Buy, you know, your domestic product. It just can't work well, ultimately. And you know, one of the other things about it, what they've already got excess unemployment in at least some of the countries in Europe. Now, how is that going to serve the United States? It means that the Europeans are going to be willing to work for less. And if they are, then Americans are going to lose jobs. On the other hand, we have high unemployment over here, too. And it means that Americans may be willing to work for less, which means Europeans are going to lose jobs. Where does this work out where it's positive for the American people? I do not see it. It may be great for multinational corporations, but I cannot understand how global free trade serves the people of the United States of America. Doesn't do anything for the middle class, doesn't do anything for the lower class, doesn't even do anything for the upper middle class. It's only the elite that really prosper from this, so far as I'm able to see. So, who knows? Government is still working against us rather than for us.
Well, I think Europe does get some of their oil, a lot of their oil from the Middle East. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. Should there be any, you know, major disruptions in, you know, in the Middle East, you know, just sort of help them out. So, again, that's something that we can look to in the future. But what's interesting, since we're talking about Europe, the unemployment by countries came out by CNN Money, and it shows Greece as the country at 27.6% unemployment, with Spain at 26.3%. And what's funny, Al, we talked about this, they have the U.S. at 7.3%. However, if we go to John Williams's and his unemployment numbers, if they were accounted properly, we'd be right up there with Greece and Spain at 23%.
Yeah, I understand. And what do you make of all of this? People, oh, the poor Greeks, you know? Huh. I mean, the Greeks are probably in better shape than we are. Although I get that they have more serious problems right at this moment. But in terms of real long-term liabilities, they probably have better. They're probably in better shape than we are, if only because we have this enormous debt that can never be repaid. Greece is broke. I get that. But we are in the hole. It's one thing to walk up to somebody who doesn't have any money. Okay, poor guy, doesn't have any money. Walk up to another guy who's $200 trillion in debt. It's better to have no money than it is to be $200 trillion in debt. Again, Congressional Budget Office. They claim that the total national debt, included unfunded liabilities, is over $200 trillion. I mean, the poor guy got nothing. Yeah, he's got more than the guy who's $200 trillion in the hole, and that's this government. I'm Alfred Addisk. We're here on Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. All your gold and silver coin needs.
We're going to carry through that special from yesterday, and AU $5 Liberty gold piece, almost a quarter ounce of gold, along with 20 Morgan silver dollars pre 1921, so they're beautiful, beautiful coins, and your total package, including shipping, is $1,000. $1,000 includes everything. It's a great little package, folks. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188, and we'll be adding your name twice to the basket to receive and to possibly receive for the drawing at the end of the month of Mint State 62, $10 Indian gold piece, along with 20 one-ounce silver eagles 2013. So just give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, the programs are archived on a daily basis. And if you have any questions for the program, direct those to questions at dgscoins.com, questions at dgscoins.com.
We've got an article here from Reuters. It talks about President Obama met with top bank chief and executives to discuss the government shutdown and looming deadlines to raise the nation's debt limit. The bank chiefs met with... The bank chiefs he met with included such upstanding moneylenders as Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, Michael Corbett of Citigroup, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase, and Brian Moynihan of Bank of America. And it's worth noting that each and every one of these men have presided over one financial fraud or scandal of some sort during the last 5 years. Now, that's an important point. Now, I'm reading that from an article that's derived from Reuters in Global Research. They're quoting Reuters, and they're expanding on this. And it's important, it's at least interesting and perhaps important to notice that every one of the leaders, every one of the CEOs of these major corporations have presided over a financial fraud or scandal, or at least one over the last 5 years. It does not imply that these guys are averse to criminal activity. Right? Suggests that maybe it doesn't bother them as long as they can get away with it. And they go on to point out J.P. Morgan just offered the feds $3 billion to add in probes into its dodgy mortgage business. And that means, I mean, I think I understand what's going on in the mortgage industry, and we've talked about it in the past a little bit. It has been an extraordinarily profitable racket. And the people responsible for this racket are up at the top of the banks, and they have been essentially extorting money from the American people. They've been taking money under false pretenses. And it's part of the reason they're in a bind, and they may agree to pay $3 billion and wind up, I think the government wants $11 billion. That's pretty serious. That's a pretty serious fine. And it's not just evidence of civil liability. It's evidence of criminal liability. Again, the article continues, yes, Obama's met with Goldman Sachs and company in order to arrange for a new debt ceiling, or more accurately, a new line of credit. The only problem, he cannot do this during the shutdown. Such an act is in direct violation of the Anti-Deficiency Act of 1870. That U.S. law clearly prohibits a government office holder from incurring any monetary obligation for which the Congress has not appropriated funds. Okay, if they haven't appropriated funds, you can't go ahead and say, well, I'm the president, here, let me just write you a check for $1 billion and we'll get it to you. He can't write the $1 billion check until the Congress has first appropriated funds. And under the shutdown, apparently they can't appropriate any further funds until the debt ceiling is resolved and government goes back to business. Now, this is an interesting problem for the government. And people sit back and say, well, this is interesting. No, it's not just a problem. It's a question of who is going to obey the law in this country. This 1870 law has been an Anti-Deficiency Act. It's been amended a couple of times. It's not just some obscure law out of ancient history. This is big-time law. This is something they know about. This is something they know they're bound by. And yet, according to this article, Obama is threatening to violate that law. And this article continues, administrative officials should be concerned about this important 19th century law. That would be the Anti-Deficiency Act. One that could send them packing or perhaps imprisoned should they choose, as president has today, to take the law into their own hands behind the back of the American people while government is shut down. And now we've got, the question then, what happens? We've got a government that doesn't obey the law, and most of us sit back and just wink. We don't even see it as government behaving corruptly. We see it as government just doing whatever necessity compels it to do. And government wants us to see things that way. Because insofar as we do, we allow the government. Go ahead, break the law. We don't care. Do whatever you want. You're the government. Do what thou wilt. You know? But Supreme Court Justice Louis D. Brandeis, he made a comment on whether government should or should not obey the law. In his dissenting opinion in Homestead versus the United States, Supreme Court case in 1928. And he said, decency, security, and liberty alike demand that government officials shall be subjected to the same rules of conduct as are commanded to the citizen. In a government of laws, existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Our government is the potent, the omnipresent teacher. For good or for ill, it teaches the whole people by its example. Crime is contagious. If the government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. It invites anarchy. Huh? I believe Brandes had a point. It's dramatic. His commentary is dramatic. And the real consequences of this observation aren't quite so dramatic. If government begins to obey the law or disobey the law now, we don't really see much of a degeneration of Americans' respect for the law for the first... It takes several years for American people to finally get to a point where they say, look, if the government's not obeying the law, why should I? Huh? But it does catch up. And as the government breaks more laws and more laws and becomes increasingly lawless, sooner or later, people begin to realize, if the government's not going to obey the law, why should I? CNBC continued in this article. They said, if the nation is being run by a self-serving criminal class of charlatans, then nothing will come of Obama's latest affront to constitutional law. This is interesting. This is CNBC. If the nation is being run by a self-serving criminal class of charlatans, then nothing will come of Obama's latest affront to constitutional law. And that's perhaps the truth of the matter. I mean, yeah, Obama, he may have broke the law, but who's going to enforce against him? Eric Holder? His buddy at the Department of Justice? I don't think so. Who's going to enforce against him? He has become above the law. And in doing so, does he become lawless? Does he become a criminal? Does he inspire others to also become criminal? So, what is government and Obama teaching us if not that crime pays? Obama, the law is optional. It doesn't mean anything. You know, if you got to break the law, break the law. That's all. And it can't bode well for our society, it can't bode well for our economy. A government that is able and inclined to violate the law on a regular basis. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. The government routinely violates that law and principle. State governments violate it. Local governments violate it. Feds don't exactly violate it, but they violate the spirit of the law by removing gold and silver from circulation. And as government becomes increasingly lawless, it grows bigger. As it grows bigger, it becomes increasingly lawless. The same thing is true. We're supposed to have limited government in this country. What limits the government? And the answer is limited by what? Limited by law. And the next question is, if the government is limited by law, if limited government is limited by law, what do we say about unlimited government? Well, it's not limited by law. It is unlimited. It is lawless. They can do anything they want. They just say, we're the government. For them, might makes right. We are clearly moving, we've been clearly moving from a limited government towards an unlimited government. We've been doing it throughout my lifetime and yours. And perhaps we're seeing a moment where the public has finally had enough and say, no, we got to go back to limited government. And if we do, those limits are law. It means the government has to obey the law. That's the law is what establishes limits. And whose law? Not government's law. The limits on government can't be imposed by congressional statute. If we allow the government to make its own, set its own limits, that's like letting your teenage boy decide what time he's coming in from every night after school. Somebody's got to set the limits who has more authority than the teenage boy. Someone's got to set the limits that have more authority than the Congress and the federal government. Who is that? And there's only two sources. One is God with God's law, and the second one is we the people with the people's law, which is our Constitution. Constitution defines the limits in limited government, and our government has been doing everything it can to get around them. Is that going to work for us? Is that justified? will it lead to an economic collapse? I think it increases the probability of an economic collapse. You can't run this system on the basis of government is allowed to commit criminal acts, and government-approved, you know, special interests can commit criminal acts. Somebody's got to be actually held responsible, and that hasn't been happening, and until that does happen, our confidence in this government, in our currency, in our economy has got to be diminished. I won't say it's a lethal blow, but it's not good for business. What else, Melody?
I don't know. You know what? It's, you know, they've been breaking the laws for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it doesn't make it right, but it makes everyone accepts it. And
yep.
We've talked about this before earlier this week. And
yep.
It's, you know, we've become immune to it. We've become, there's no one ever held accountable for anything that they do. There was an important article this week. You mentioned Eric Holder, where the information that they were trying to keep out on his Fast and Furious was rejected by the courts, but yet you don't hear anything about that. You have the situation with, you know, Benghazi and everything else, and it's just like, and this is just this administration, and it's just not this administration, and that's, it goes back a long way, and it goes back to
here.
Wall Street. You, I mean, you can talk anti-government, but you can, you know, it's everything. It's Wall Street. It's, you know, it's almost every part of our lives we get taken. Every day I read about scandals and schemes and where people are taken for millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it's just like, you know, it's these criminals wouldn't survive or thrive if it wasn't for the people.
Yep.
And if they've got to stop, they have to start thinking. They have to start.
The difference, it may be that we've never had a truly honest government. We certainly like to think we've had them in the past. We can point to different administrations that we may have liked and favored in the past. But there is almost certainly a degree of criminal behavior in probably every administration, every Congress, every bit of government you can point to. There may be times, episodes when there wasn't anything crooked going on for a while. But it's been allowed to happen. But it's been kept under wraps. And the difference now, as much as anything, I don't know if we have more crime today than we had 20 years ago or 50 years ago in Congress. I don't know that. I can't say. But I know that it is more overt. That's the problem. It's just obvious. It's there in your face. Nobody's even trying to conceal it. All right? They're a bunch of crooks. Everybody knows they're a bunch of crooks, and so what? No one seems to have a sense. We seem to have lost our sense of moral outrage, or at least most people have. Most of us, when we see that the government has managed to steal, some guy in government has managed to steal $500,000, I think the most common reaction in this country, I don't know if it's the most common, but it would be it would be 30%, maybe not 50 or 51%, but it might be 30%. Well, the people say, well, I wish I could have got that $500,000. I guarantee I'd be gone. It can't work well for us. We've got to regain some morality. If you want to restore this economy, first order of business, we're going to have to restore some real law and order, and not just for the way, you know, the poor people and the middle class, even for government. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, career on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just saw this headline today. Earlier this week, we talked about Jerry Brown as he exempted California from being involved in any part of the NDAA.
Yeah. National Defense Authorization Act.
Yes. And now today, the headline is coming from California. He's just busy signing all kinds of things. Illegal immigrant driver's licenses, only the first step. But after just skimming the information, California joins New Mexico, Oregon, and Washington, among other states.
Yep.
Which I find it interesting. I didn't realize there were that many states that were allowing the...
illegals have driver's licenses.
Yes.
Do you know why that is?
Because
technically the illegals, when you take the license, you actually assume certain liabilities, and it may change your status. It's a diminished status. There's no license required within a state of the union. It's a title of nobility, and it wouldn't be approved within a state of the union. But these driver's licenses are almost certainly territorial rather than issued by true states of the union. That's a complex argument, hard to explain, hard to believe, maybe true, maybe false, but it appears to be true. My point is, you don't have to obey a whole bunch of traffic laws until you have promised to obey them by virtue of taking the driver's license. You are more free without it than you are with it, which is hard to believe, all right, given that you might get thrown in the slammer if they catch you driving without a license. But what are they going to do with an illegal alien? They've got to get him to agree to be bound by some of these laws. They don't have him ensnared by citizenship, and if they can't get him to sign his name someplace, what is their basis for arresting him? They'll make him, the illegals will be, they'll be subject to much more law. It's not just a convenience. He's not doing them a favor. He's enticing them. Say, here, put your head in the noose. Just like they've enticed you and me and Melody and everyone else. Here, put your head in the noose. It's for your own good. Well, what it really means is it gives government power over you that they didn't previously have. So I don't see passing out driver's licenses to illegals. You're not doing them a favor.
Well, California, they estimated 1.4 million new drivers, and they're going to be opening up six new offices to handle all these numbers. But the governor of New Mexico, she is trying very hard to repeal the law, arguing that it served as a magnet for illegal immigrants from other states who come to New Mexico and fraudulently acquire them. And then while the number of insured drivers on the road has increased only slightly in the 3 years since the state laws have passed. And I used to market property insurance to New Mexico many, many moons ago. And I mean, it was a, you know, it was a problem then. I can only imagine what the problem is today. And the company I was with, we eventually had to pull out because the losses were so severe. Because of not only from a lot of these independent agents, but because so
uninsured
many of these
motorists.
Uninsured motorists. And that was why we pulled out uninsured motorists.
Sure.
And so
I did a study on uninsured motorists back about 1992. So it's a long time ago. But there was a lot of headlines in the Texas newspapers that there were, I don't remember the numbers anymore, it's more than 20 years ago, so I don't recall clearly, but there were millions of uninsured motorists in Texas, and they caused billions of dollars of damages. And when you read the numbers in the newspapers, it said, oh my gosh, this is a terrible problem, we've got to do something about it. But when you divided the number of people driving without insurance, or you took the number of people driving without insurance and you divided it into the sum of money that they caused, the damages that they caused, their damages averaged out to something like $40 or $50 a month at a time when people were paying $100, $200 a month for insurance. And when you did the analysis, you began to realize that the uninsured motorists were technically safer drivers than the ones that are insured. It's the uninsured motorists that know they're always in jeopardy, that they're always alert, and they're going to try to stop at every stop sign, and they're going to try not to ride in any red lights, and they're not going to go out and get drunk and drive. Now, I don't mean none of them will, but on average, when you don't have that insurance, you know that the liability, it's all on you. If there's a problem, you got to pay for it. And as a result, they tended to be more careful drivers than the ones who were paying a couple hundred dollars a month for automobile insurance. That was the implication. On the flip side is that the insurance companies were overcharging the people who actually were insured. One of two things was true. And again, it was over 20 years ago that I looked at the numbers, but I spent some time on it and I remember it. And I'll bet you something like that is true even today. You know, we see these dramas where the uninsured guy does something crazy. It's the guy who knows his new car is fully insured, who has a lot more confidence about driving drunk midnight or 2 a.m. than he does if the car is not insured. And therefore, he's willing to take the chance. Why not? I'm insured.
Yeah, but usually also, I mean, I could see the flip on that. If you're driving an old beater, you really don't care if you run into a pole. And that was a lot of the problem. They didn't care. They didn't own the vehicles. They weren't entitled to them. You know, they bought them off of some lot from somebody for, you know, $100. I mean, they didn't care. It wasn't a brand new vehicle, so they didn't care to be insured.
Well, you're talking about doing damage. I get that.
Yeah,
I follow what you're
saying.
It's not an easy thing either way you go, any way you go at it. There's not an easy solution. I'm just saying there is. There's more than one side on this. It's not exactly cut and dried.
Yeah, and you would also think that if you're driving a new vehicle, well, a lot of your policies now include replacement costs, but that's just fairly recent. Therefore, you know, for many, 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 many years, if you were driving a new car and you got hit and you were responsible for a lot of that vehicle because it, you know, there was so much depreciation that the insurance didn't cover But now a lot of those policies cover it like a replacement cost, just like a homeowner. So you don't have that problem anymore. But, you know, another bill that Jerry Brown signed, I don't know if he signed it in a law he was supposed to, but he was looking to a bill to allow non-physicians to perform abortions. And you know what? It's, you know, we talk about signs, Al, and it's just like, you got to be kidding me.
That's hard to believe.
You got to be kidding me.
That's
but
extremely
Jerry Brown,
hard to believe.
All of them, I would believe Jerry Brown would sign it.
Well, it's still hard to believe that anyone would do that. Hey, I mean, that just opens up to so much liability. I don't know if, you know, I mean, it's one of those things I'd want to confirm that that was a true story, whether it was they did it, they're talking about doing it, or somebody just imagined it. I'm not sure, but it is a spectacular story if it's true.
Well, here.
And even if it's merely proposed, it's a spectacular story. They're going to let unlicensed physicians, people who haven't even been to med school, apparently, perform abortions?
Yeah, but hey, it passed both houses of the state legislature with strong support from Planned Parenthood. He was supposed to sign it September 30th. So
that's just astonishing.
Yeah.
You know how this is going to work out. You know that there are going to be situations where...
Thou cometh and we, thy savior.
What are you doing?
We don't. Some girl's boyfriend thinks he can perform an abortion.
Sure. I mean, when I was young, I mean, they didn't. Before abortions became legal, they used to call them back alley abortions. You know,
I understand.
You have pimps doing their.
Well, it may be designed to cut some of the costs for Obamacare. You know, it may be that thanks to Obamacare, in order to reduce our health costs, maybe we can have back alley abortions again, where you just, you know, maybe you know somebody down the street who's got their own. Yeah, and they know how to sterilize a coat hanger. So,
well, you know, they have all those various, I don't even know what they're called, next morning pills or the day after pills or whatever and so forth. It's hard to believe that folks even get as far as needing an abortion in today's world. But anyway. That's for another day.
I don't know that anybody needs an abortion. Certainly, we don't need the number that we have.
Absolutely,
but it's an extraordinary. You know, and you know who commits the most abortions in this country, on a racial basis. Blacks.
Blacks. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard estimates that run as high as 50% of the children that are conceived in the African American community are aborted by their own mothers. Mexicans, Hispanics are down around 30% of the children they conceive are aborted. And last time I heard it was something like 9% of the children conceived to white mothers are aborted. The whites are relatively, comparatively, you know, a fifth the rate. And the African Americans are killing over half the kids that they conceive. It has to be. You know, the demographic consequences for the African-American community cannot be good. If they continue to do this, and now if they're going to allow back-alley abortions, I guarantee you know where that's headed. You're going to have pimps and drug dealers doing abortions. Come on down, get yourself some coke or whatever, and we'll give you a throw in a free abortion.
That's so sad. You know, again,
it's a terrible situation.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible. And I'm not a, you know, I certainly don't believe in abortions. I remember when I was young, abortions, I mean, it started out for those who were ill that you could lose your life, and look where it's headed today. I mean,
it's a convenience.
Yes.
It's a convenience. That's all it is. It's like, I don't know. It's just become, and
it's horrible.
It's a terrible, absolutely, terrible situation. Terrible. You know, it's the sort of thing, part of the reason we have an invasion by illegal aliens in this country is because, and we're saying, oh, they're taking the jobs Americans don't want. That was one of the arguments. They never took the jobs Americans didn't want. They took the wages Americans didn't want. There's a job out there that any one of us wouldn't do if the price is right. All right? When we brought the illegal aliens in, they took the wages that Americans didn't want. That's what actually happened on this. But part of the reason for the influx of illegal aliens is because we've aborted somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 million American children over the course of the last, I don't know, what is it, 40 years or thereabouts?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, those are the kids who would have been picking our tomatoes and baling hay and doing the work that the illegal aliens are performing. I don't mean completely, I don't mean exclusively, but part of the reason for the invasion by illegal aliens is that we've knocked off a generation or more of American children. And so we've created a kind of social vacuum, and it has drawn the illegal aliens in. They are here to compensate for the children that would otherwise have been here except for abortion. Part of the reason. I won't say it's the only reason, but it's part of the reason. We got about 3 minutes left, Melody. What
and
else?
I was just told that it was... he did sign it. We got a couple questions in. Yesterday's shooting in D.C., was this a false flag attack since they killed an unarmed person? This happens all the shooting cases in the past where the so-called perpetrator is killed. Dead men can't talk. Every shooting gives Obama a case to control or take arms.
Yeah, but in this case, again, the woman who was killed in this, so far as I know, didn't have a firearm. The only thing she had was an automobile. And therefore, this does not apply. And this isn't a false flag situation. No one is alleging that this woman was here from the Muslim Brotherhood or Israel, Uganda, pick a country. This is a woman who's, in fact, reports I've seen, she'd had the baby and suffered from postpartum depression. And that was that's what some people think drove her to this problem. So. There's no false flag here.
You know what I find interesting, though, is there's no discussions today. They took all video cameras of the chase, and some of those chases were pretty interesting, and it put questions in your mind. I didn't see any. Of course, I don't have time to follow the news throughout the day and the CNBCs or the CNNs and the those types of channels to see if they are showing those videos of that. But from the news that I follow, it's like it was a non-event. And
it's a strange thing because a lot of people are going to be upset that an unarmed woman was shot.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, and you can't, and this is going to antagonize, again, people in the African-American community. They just got done with what they thought happened to Trayvon Martin. Now they're going to, I guarantee there are going to be allegations that something similar happened here. Yeah. And what are you going to do? Yeah, I have to keep a lid on it. But we have to put a lid on it too, Melody, because we are out of time. We'll be back on Monday. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
Have a good weekend, folks. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.